Welcome. This is William Evans, and we're shifting gears. Our guest today is Hugh Kingery, an old friend, and our conversation is focused on a small gray bird, the American Dipper, also known as ouzel. Welcome, Hugh.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
Hugh is the author of the American Dipper component of the Birds of North America, a comprehensive encyclopedia of bird species in the United States and Canada, published by the Cornell Ornithology Lab. And Hugh, you have a degree from Cornell in zoology.
Right. That was long ago.
Yeah, well, we can remember some things long ago. As a source water state, Colorado has a long tradition of a healthy, vigorous American Dipper population.
Right. And the main thing that dippers need for, in the first place, and this is true of most birds, is suitable habitat.
Right.
And for the dipper, they need the same habitat year-round, fast-moving, clear and unpolluted streams, and they like cascades and ripples and waterfalls.
Right.
Their streams are rarely more than 50 feet wide or 6 feet deep, although in the winter they'll use slightly wider and deeper streams.
Right.
So this restricts them pretty much to the headwaters of the Rocky Mountain streams.
And being a source water state, we provide a good amount of habitat.
Yes. And we're among the major recorders of dippers on various surveys that are conducted nationwide, like the Breeding Bird Survey.
Right. Say a little more about the natural history of the American Dipper.
Well, the next thing is food. And they'll eat almost any aquatic insect. They have a variety of ways of getting after them. The food can be particularly larval life stages of things like caddisflies, mayflies, and dipter, which are midges and crane flies and mosquitoes. And they can walk on the water and grab things. They can swim underwater and get stuff that way. The thing I like most to watch them is in the winter when they'll stand on a ledge of ice and then plunge into the water to grab something.
Right. Yeah, they are a hardy year-round mountain resident.
Indeed.
But they need open water to find...
They need open water, so if the upper reaches of the stream freeze, that forces the ones who are breeding there downstream. And apparently puts the migrants, the ones from upstream, at something of a disadvantage because the ones downstream seem to be healthier and hardier and have more success breeding their year-round territories. And they do set up winter spaces or winter territories, and you can see them chasing each other up and downstream when they're trying to defend it.
Somebody's pushing the boundaries?
Yeah. And they're very noisy. The streams make a lot of noise. And so in order to hear themselves, the dippers make a lot of noise. And they have a very loud rattle as well as a very loud song. And you often hear the song in September as well as in the spring.
Right.
Because in September and October, they're setting up those winter territories.
And for winter, their feather system's pretty critical.
They have half again as many feathers per on their body as similar birds, as birds of similar sizes do, because of their, I suppose you'd say, aquatic lifestyle.
And in addition to these short, powerful wings and that upthrust tail, the feet are very impressive, and I realize they're serious feet because that's what enables Dipper to hold on to the bottom and not get washed downstream.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Another thing is that Dippers dip, and I think that's another way of showing them that people don't really know why Dippers dip, but I think one of the reasons may be so that people upstream so that birds upstream can see them. Another possible reason is that if they dip while they're feeding, they can get a different angle of light on the stream and may be able to see the insect more readily.
The other remarkable thing for me is seeing fledglings on rocks in the spring runoff. I'm just filled with awe. It's a fierce initiation into life.
Well, it certainly is, and they're quite noisy when they after they fledge. And it's interesting about how they behave. Sometimes, not always, the parent dippers will split their brood between them and occupy different sections of the stream. And with some songbirds, which includes dippers, a crucial song learning period happens shortly after they fledge from the nest. And with dippers, when they have these divided broods, why, the adults, particularly after they fed them, will sing at them so that you can see a male singing his song right after he's fed the young. And the female does the same. But the female's song is only half as long as the male, but she sings twice as often as the male.
Right.
So apparently that's how they learn to sing.
Yeah. The dipper is referred to as an indicator species. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, if you have dippers, it suggests that you have an unpolluted stream that isn't full of various pollutants and things like that.
And go ahead.
Your turn.
And you're updating your monograph on the American Dipper. Is that pretty well finished?
I'm struggling with that.
You're now, struggling
one thing
with
we've left out is the nest site, because the main criterion for a successful territory is having a decent nest site. And this requires a ledge or something similar that's protected overhead from the elements, that has difficult access so predators can't get to it, and may or may not have a spray of water on it, although sometimes when the nest site doesn't have a spray of water, the dipper, when building the nest, will drop them off into the water before they put it into the nest, so that it's, I suppose, fits in better and makes it more compact.
Right. In your 1996 monograph, you included a quote from two British authorities that healthy dipper population on upland rivers throughout the world indicate healthy river ecosystems.
Yeah, and that's what you were driving at before, that they show unpolluted streams.
And will you probably include those words again in your new edition?
Yeah, it's just a revision. It's not a rewrite.
Right. And dipper will abandon polluted streams or those where the water is taken for irrigation or transmountain diversions.
Well, it depends on what's left. If it still offers the proper feeding area and a decent nesting area, they'll hang around you know, a Trans Mountain diversion may reduce the flow, but it can sometimes at least leave the flow. And another thing that happens, they readily adapt to human structures that provide the right nest structure. So when we put in roads, sometimes that improves their habitat because the bridges provide ledges where the birds can nest.
Right. Yeah, the bridges are a benefit when they provide safe nest sites.
Right.
Well, I'm concerned about river pollution and local dipper population here in Carbondale. The song of source water can so easily become a stream of tears.
Yeah, and I'm not familiar with the stream in the Carbondale area, so I can't really comment on it.
Are you aware of any recovery successes where a polluted stream's been healed and a departed dipper population has returned and re-inhabited?
Well, in a way, I've just read about a situation on the Olympic Peninsula in the state of Washington.
Right.
There was a dam across the Elwha River.
Right.
And there was a good population of healthy dippers below it, and those above it, there were some up there, but the ones below had a lot more indications of healthy breeding, like they had many more multiple broods and were more likely to stay there in the summer or in the winter. And they removed the dam on the river, and after that, there were more dippers upstream, and they started reflecting the healthier status of the ones that had been below the dam. So, yes, they can come back when things improve.
Yeah, wow. I wasn't aware of that benefit, but it makes sense. When that dam came down, I knew the salmon started going right back up.
Yeah, and that was it. The salmon seemed to add nutrients both when the dipper eat their eggs and from some kind of bottom-up enrichment that happens when salmon get into the stream.
Right. And so when available, they will eat eggs.
Yes, fish eggs.
Right, and flying insects.
Right. Although mostly they like the stuff that's in the river, like the larvae of the various insects I mentioned.
Right. Well, you know, another concern I'm realizing is we're having increasingly hot days here, and we're going to begin to approach what you identified as the upper critical temperature dipper can cope with. In 1996, you noted the bird probably can't survive air temperatures above 36 degrees centigrade or 96.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right, and I don't really. That was a paper that a researcher wrote, and I don't really have any details about it. But as you say, we're certainly experiencing a lot of hot weather this summer.
Boy, we are too.
Both where you live and where we live.
Yes. So the second edition of the Colorado Breeding Bird Atlas suggests there's some worrisome trends, and there may be an apparent decline in our state's dipper population, and they suggested a real need for intensive study.
Yeah, I agree with that. A breeding bird atlas is conducted in a block that's essentially 3 miles on a side. And when we do the atlas, survey one block in each topographic map, and there are 6 blocks in the topographic map, so we survey 1/6 of the state. And we call those blocks that we survey priority blocks. The second atlas found dippers in 27% fewer blocks than the first atlas. And it's a little hard to analyze that. I don't know what the causes are, because in non-priority blocks, Atlas has found them in a good deal more sites. The first Atlas found them in 250 Atlas blocks, and the second one in 180. So it was a substantial decrease.
Right. Well, I certainly know over the years I've seen fewer and fewer, and then, you know, very worrisome this year.
And I haven't been getting out into the mountains so much, so I can't really give any personal ideas. There are other surveys that could provide information about trends, but and particularly the feeding bird survey, which is conducted in the U.S. and Canada. And the trouble is, for dippers, it doesn't show trends that you can rely on for sure. The surveys run along roads, and when you're at a stopping at a stream, the stream can be so noisy you can't hear anything, and the dippers may or may not be there.
Right.
And so it's hard to... The breeding bird survey just doesn't provide a really good analysis, although it does show some declines in Colorado and Montana and on other states. It shows increases in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. The Washington, Oregon, Idaho trends are totally unreliable, and the Colorado ones are a little more reliable, but not perfect.
Right. You're listening to Shifting Gears, and we're in a conversation with Hugh Kingery about the aquatic songbird known as the American Dipper. In 1875, John Muir wrote with poetic eloquence of his delight with the ways of Dipper, who he in those days called water ouzel.
He did. He was a real fan. Hold on, I'll read it.
And these are John Muir's words.
This is 1894. The dipper's music is that of the streams, defined and spiritualized. The deep, booming notes of the falls are in it. The trills of the rapids, the gurgling of margin eddies, low whispering of the level reaches, and the sweet tinkle of separate drops oozing from the ends of bosses falling into tranquil ponds. Makes you want to go up and hear a dipper sing right now.
Yes. Well, fortunately, we've got source water places I can go and have spent a lot of time watching them and watching them feed their young in the nest this spring and summer. It's such a magical experience. And John Muir devoted a whole chapter to the water dipper, chapter 13 of California Mountains.
You've done some research.
Oh, yeah, I'm having fun. So when did the name switch from ouzel to American Dipper? I noticed Alfred Bailey's two volumes on the birds of Colorado. He referred to dippers, so he was aware of
that. I'm not sure when it happened, but the reason they changed is that there are six other species like the dipper, which are called dipper. There's one in Europe and a couple in South America and a couple in Asia. And since they're all dippers, why they decided this one should be the American dipper. And water ouzel sounds like such a more musical name, but...
We've gone scientific.
Dipper also describes how they behave, so that's okay, too.
Right. Well, somewhere I read that the South American relatives don't dip.
That's in this monograph. And apparently there's some other ducks that inhabit the same territory. And there's something about the coexistence of those, the two species, that I guess discourages dipping by the South American species.
Hugh, do you have any personal dipper stories you'd be willing to share?
Well, the best one was when we watched, this was at Breckenridge, and we watched a dipper, I don't know whether it's a male or a female, come in and feed the squawking young, and then after they were done, why, he started singing at him. It was really very funny to watch.
And you say that as if there was a real serious intensity to the song.
Oh, yes, indeed. The male was trying to get them to listen to it, and I think they did.
All
we
right.
Hope they're now breeding on the same river.
Yeah, may it be so. Well, there's certainly something that happens to me when I watch this little bird dive into a source water river and then explode back out and land on the rock right where it was dancing before.
And I particularly like to see them doing that off of the ice ledges because it seems so nonsensical. But they're equipped with their feathers and their swimming abilities to get in there, get the insect, come out, and shake off the water and persist.
And they can function well at very low temperatures.
Indeed. I think there may be a lower limit, but they show up in Alaska, and there are even some streams up there where there are only little patches of open water, and the dippers spend the winter in those little patches. Often they involve hot springs that keep the water open.
Right. Well, there's certainly something beautiful and magical about watching them, and you realize you're witnessing something really special on Earth.
I think that's true, but I think that's true of a lot of birds as well. We enjoy seeing other stuff in our yard, and yet the dipper is a unique and magical critter.
It certainly is. Anything else you would want to say about them?
I think you've wrung out everything I can come up with.
Well, it's been interesting because over the last year I've been doing a series of conversations about trust and realize today we're arriving from a different direction at a new perspective, and perhaps the question now is whether source water and American dipper can trust the innate long-term intelligence of human life-sustaining good-heartedness. Because as long as humans have walked the earth, we've fed on Mother Earth's life-sustaining intelligence and partnerships, and we need to remember how to match her gifts with our own intelligence and stature.
That's an eloquent statement.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you. Coming from you, I take that with much gratitude. Thank you, Hugh.
You're welcome.
This is William Evans. You've been listening to Shifting Gears and a conversation with Hugh Kingery about American dipper, an aquatic songbird and a source water indicator species. This is KDNK. Thank you for listening.